News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Sound Bites. This is America's longest running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 26th of March, Anno Domini 2006. And you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And we'll be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, interesting things, not so interesting things. We're going to just do it all. You can give us a call at the numbers you heard at the top of the show. And we'll be talking. But here at 8 minutes after the hour, we're going to tell you about a fascinating little bit of news. Internet Explorer. Now, many times we've told you, stop using Internet Explorer.
How many years have we been saying that?
Well, it looks there's another flaw. Yes, there's another flaw that lets hackers take over a PC. That hit the net on Thursday. Microsoft is thinking, well, you know, our next update is scheduled for April 11th, but maybe, just maybe, they'll release an update outside the typical security cycle. I think that is so generous of them. I can't begin to tell you how
they're just so thoughtful.
Impressed I am with that.
Yes,
that they're willing to do that.
Looking
for
out
us.
For the small common.
It isn't out yet. I don't want you to get excited about that, but it could
they're
come out.
They're thinking about it.
They're waiting just before tax day so they can take down all the computers trying to do taxes.
Right. The exploit is out there in the wild. It's going to hit you. If you're still using Internet Explorer, don't say we didn't warn you. The exploit is out there in the wild, and there is no fix for it.
And as of yet.
Backing up half a second, if you click on a big blue E to get on the Internet, you're using Internet Explorer.
Yeah. Right.
There's a lot of folks don't.
You want to click on an orange fox.
Right. You want to use Firefox. We've talked about that a million times. It's easy enough to get.
You don't get all the pop-ups and everything else. I mean, it's just so much safer to use. We've been installing it on so many folks' machines down at the shop. It's unbelievable. And folks are really thanking us because they get into the mode. They think, well, that came on the computer. I got to use that. No, you don't. Internet Explorer is with every computer. Granted, because Gates had proven to the court system that he's interwoven, i.e. with the OS.
Right.
So you can't take it out. But that is not your only default browser. You can have as many browsers on there as you want. You could sit there and have Opera. You could have Netscape. You could have Firefox, Internet Explorer, and what's some of the others? I think I've hit the majority of them.
OmniWeb.
There's a bunch of them.
You could literally have all of those open at one time.
If you have enough RAM.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's easy enough to get Firefox. The easiest way to do it is to go to getfirefox.com. That'll redirect you to mozilla.com/Firefox.
Cool.
But easy to download, easy to install, easy to use, and a whole lot safer. Really, don't say we didn't warn you if you've gotten another virus. If you find your machine's been taken over, it's all about IE. So be very careful. Very careful. Be careful out there. All right, our first caller?
Yeah, we can do that.
Our first caller is Victor from Irondequoit. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
My hard drive and the CDs, just in case something goes wrong. Well, if my hard drive crashes, how do I go about transferring all my documents and my CDs back to the new hard drive?
Now, are you using a compression program or a particular program to get them onto the CD?
I'm just dragging them.
Then you do CD. Just the opposite. You drag them from your CD back to your hard drive.
Oh, okay.
And that's why it's usually much easier to use a backup program that will automatically back up your documents. And the second time you run it, it backs up only the changed document, so it doesn't take as long. And then the downside of that is then you run the restore program to pick which one you want back. But if in case of a catastrophic failure, you want everything back. Most of the restore programs have a button that says restore everything.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I do like you. I just copy, you know, drag everything to a CD and be done with it. And then one thing you might run into is you might notice that when you bring them back, you might open up a file and it says read only. Because you dragged it, copied it from a CD, which is technically read only, you might have to select all the files, right click on it, and uncheck read only. So that you can, you know, make changes in that to the files once they're back onto the hard drive.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That should be something the operating system should take care of.
Well, it does. It does sometimes, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yep.
So that's why I tell folks, you know, it takes but 2 seconds. Once you copy them all back to the My Docs folder, while they're still highlighted, right-click on them, and the very first screen that pops up, you'll see whether it's checked for read only. Just yep. Uncheck it. It undoes it for every one of the files that you had selected, and now makes them so you can make changes and everything else to them. But
right.
Backup. That's been the big thing. I mean, I've been getting a number of folks coming in and asking for the external hard drives, which, you know, we can put literally any size yep. hard drive in it, creating old batch files. As a matter of fact, I'm still using some of the DOS commands, xcopy and that type of stuff. I found sure. more versatile, as far as creating a routine and just having it so a person can click on one icon and it literally copies their specific folders and settings and everything else to an external hard drive.
Right.
And they've got everything backed up. And it's just one button. They turn off the monitor and it does it. And I love it.
Right.
Okay.
Next caller, we
got to go down here.
Is Doug from Hilton, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's your question?
Morning, guys. My question is about Firefox, and I use AOL, and Firefox, it sounds like a great idea. I just want to know, how do I install it and make sure that that's what AOL is going to be using when I go out on the net?
I don't think you can.
You can't.
Yeah, you can't.
AOL wants you to use its own browser internal to AOL. So what you have to do is, after you dial into AOL, you click the Firefox icon yourself.
So I'm kind of stuck with what AOL's offering me.
You got it.
Well, once you dial in, you can just minimize the AOL window and ignore it after you're dialed in.
Oh, okay. I will try that. I got a second question for you, if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
This has to do with the iPods and connecting up to the computer. We got my daughter a Shuffle iPod, and first of all, they didn't tell me that it needed USB high speed to talk to it and to charge it. The other question is on the iPod itself, it says that it needs, if you use an XP, it wants you to have the Service Pack 2 installed, or it requires that. Just any feedback on any of that?
All right, we'll do that after the break. We got to take a quick break, but when we come back with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and the answer to that question on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
America's longest running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. Before we get back.
Wait a minute, we still had to answer that
question.
Oh,
yeah, we have to answer that question. Go ahead.
On the iPad.
Yes, it's something we've talked about quite often. Whenever you buy a new piece of software, a new piece of hardware, make sure you read the system requirements on the side of the box. And yes, unfortunately, the new iPods do require a USB 2 port in order to charge. It will use USB 1 to sync really, really, really slow. And it does require Windows 2000 Service Pack 4 or later. Basically, what Apple has decided is that you have to have a computer that's not less than 6 years old to run an iPod. And that seems to be a fairly reasonable assumption.
Well,
sort of. So if you do have an older computer, you can likely get a USB 2 PCI card for $15-$20. Or you can get a wall charger for the iPod and be able to charge it off the wall. And there are third-party programs that will let you run the iPods on 98-second edition and ME. So there are options available for the much older computers if you need to. But again, sort of the bottom line is, whenever you buy anything, software box, hardware box, look at the side of the box for the system requirements and make sure your computer meets it.
Can't stress that enough.
Especially when you're buying games, look at the video card requirements, because that's even worse these days.
It's unbelievable. I mean, the number of folks that come in and say, "Well, this game isn't working right. Can you get it to work?" And so we look it over.
Yeah, buy a new video card.
You tell them, I got to throw in a video card. Well, why is it costing me so much? Well, if you read the side of the box, it wouldn't. Because you wouldn't have bought the game.
Right, and that's a genuine problem. People all over the place are buying things and saying, "Well, I can't run it. What are, why? Is there something?" Well, you bought something that doesn't run in your. It's like buying a PC game and trying to run it in your Mac.
Yeah.
Without a lot of additional stuff, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, you're buying something brand new to run on a computer that's 3 or 4 years old or worse, and it's just not going to work.
Right. We're going to find that. Oh man, are we going to find
even
that
more?
With Vista,
we're gonna not find, too soon though.
Well, not too soon. That's that's another one of our news items. But we're gonna find that with Vista. People are serious. You're gonna need huge machine to run it well.
Oh yeah,
particularly the eye candy, which is the only thing that's left in it, by the way.
Well, the thing that we've been hearing, and I've been reading so far for Vista, is minimum is gonna be 1 gig of memory. Just to start it up and get it going.
Yep.
To run it decent. Now, I know Microsoft might get it down to, say, 512, but again, folks, it's like I've told you before. You can get on the thruway and do 35. Yeah, you're going to eventually get to Buffalo, but the folks doing 65 are going to get there a lot faster.
So double the minimum requirements you read on the side of a box, and then you're a little better off.
At least on the memory. At least on the memory and... Well, they also sometimes you'll see it required and optimal.
Suggested.
Go for the optimal.
Recommended. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you just go with the suggested, it might get up, it might get running. But again, it's going to be so slow and frustrating for you. You're going to put your fist through the monitor and be very displeased with it.
Right. Right. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Gary from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
I'm a little bit confused on exactly what type of anti-spyware and virus protection to have on my computer. We bought a new computer, the Dell XPS, and that comes pre-programmed with some the Windows security.
Mm-hmm.
It also came programmed with Norton security.
Right, that's a 3-month trial.
Right. We went to also Roadrunner. And they have their security package, and we also get AOL, and they have their security package. And I heard that you should not be running the two programs together. So I'm a little bit confused on which one to put on.
All right, you want
on the computer?
Pretty much doesn't matter. Pick one.
Well, what I did, as a matter of fact, I just had a brand new Dell come into the shop. Gentleman wanted me to put some more memory in it because he got in on one of those deals. Again, only 256. So he right away wanted to get it up there, and he was very pleased with that. But what I did was uninstalled all of that stuff. I uninstalled the Norton. I uninstalled all those other security packages, and I went in and put first AVG, freebie, Adware and Spybot, freebies. They do both do a good job. To sit there and try to say one program will get all the spyware, you're fooling yourself. Because Spybot will go deep into the registry. Adware goes wide. So we've covered that. Now you go to Zone Alarm for your firewall. Great product. We've recommended it across for all PCs. And let's see, what else can we get into? That basically covers them all.
Yeah, the sneaky thing that, again, read the system requirements and read the side of your box is when you buy new computers that come with either Norton or McAfee, quite often it's a 30-day trial subscription. And so at the end of that time, your antivirus stops working and stops updating.
Right.
So you have to go out and buy something new anyway. So it's nice that the ISPs, many of the ISPs provide you with free software for your subscription there. But again, if you change ISPs, you don't, you can't use that software anymore. You have to switch to other software. So the free programs that we've recommended on our Security Tango website pretty much work for everybody.
Right. Oh, and then the other thing I would say that I did for the gentleman was also put in Firefox and Thunderbird.
Yeah, get rid of the Outlook Express and Internet Explorer that come with the
machine. You will be very pleased. Your machine will run very well, and you won't have that other garbage. I had one person, though, tried to get three antivirus programs running at the same time, wondering why the system was running a little slow.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. You really just need one. You only need one antivirus program.
Two is not better in this case.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And then let alone three. So does that answer your question? Oh, you already...
It makes it more confusing. But basically, that's, you've got all these choices. There's no real way to pick one versus the other. So we like to go with the free one so you don't have to worry about paying subscription fees.
All right. Our next caller is Rod from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rod. What's your question?
Okay. We have the dreaded Internet Explorer, and we've been getting a warning supposedly from... Roadrunner that our machine is sending out multiple mailings and threatening to kick us off. And we got a thing supposedly from them with our IP address and our name and all sorts of stuff on it telling us to go to these websites, which naturally we did not do.
Right. None of that would come through Internet Explorer. If your computer was sending out too much mail, Roadrunner would shut off your mail service. So your email program, probably Outlook Express, would quit working. So okay, all of those are fake ads that pop up in Internet Explorer trying to sucker you into infecting your computer worse. Or sometimes you got to admire their gall. They make you pay for a fake program that doesn't do anything but add more spyware to your computer.
Right. In the meantime, we have this Combo EXE that keeps popping up. We haven't been able to locate it in there. Roadrunner can't tell us what it is. I know it's interfering and doing stuff, but we can't find it to boot it out.
Are you running the Adaware and SpyBot?
No, we're not.
Try downloading both Adaware and SpyBot. You got to, update them. And matter of fact, you could get the checklist at the bottom of our site to tell you exactly how to update and run them. But I would run those two programs, and 10 to 1 odds, it's going to clear that out.
Well, the combo.exe is the Ogrid worm, and is
it's a virus, so definitely dance the tango. Got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Rob Linton, with me, Nick Francesco. Before we go, I should tell you, if you're going to dance the security tango, it's easy enough to find. SecurityTango.com. Click on that Let's Dance button and print out that page. Follow it step by step. Do not skip any steps. Then at the bottom of the page, you can email the great Lori Lynch, who will send you the updated document on how to continue to update that stuff as you go along. In the meantime, Rob Jason's going to be in with more great news and stuff. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
The Renovate PCs to Max. These guys can answer your questions. Back to more Sound Bites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Sound Bites. Before we get back to the phones, we need to talk about yet another program with problems. Real Networks has warned of four flaws in the Real Player Media Player software, three of which pose a severe security risk. Now, this is in Real Network software for Microsoft Windows, for the Mac OS X, and for Linux. So nobody is safe. Nobody gets to be complacent. If you run any of those operating systems, that ought to take in a huge percentage of the people listening in.
Yeah.
You need to update your Real Player to the latest version. There is a huge flaw in it. Anywhere you go on the internet that has a Real Player file could corrupt your system and let somebody take it over and do whatever they want with it.
Do you use Real Player?
I try never to use Real Player.
Yeah, I was going to say, I found so many others. I got to blame you on this one.
Yeah.
But you got me hooked on Total Recorder.
Great.
And there's so much I can do with that as far as playing files, editing, even shrinking them.
Well, in terms of video, though.
Yeah. Well,
Twins Media Player is a good one for Windows. There are a couple of formats that only Real provides you. Although, you want to be able to make sure, even if you're using Helix Player or the Real One Player, Real Player, Rhapsody, you want to update all of these to the latest version. So make sure you do that immediately because it's huge. It's bad. So go do that. And that, and you Mac people, don't be complacent. It hits you too. You Linux people, stop laughing. This one hits you too. So make sure that you update and go for it. Our next caller is Bruce from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Hey, guys. I'm a real novice at this. I'm the kind of guy that, you know, I don't like too many buttons. I'm afraid the thing's going to explode. But I tried to download Firefox, and I got as far as the toolbar, and the toolbar started to download, but then it wouldn't close out. And I got a feeling that maybe my spyware or my firewall was blocking it.
Did the whole program download?
Well, it looked like it did. It went all the way to the end, but the window wouldn't close, so I could get to the next level.
So what toolbar were you downloading?
It was the first thing on Firefox when I got there. Was I followed? You know, I went to step one that said download the Firefox toolbar. I guess.
No, you might.
Has nothing to do with Firefox.
Yeah. You want
to
go?
Okay.
Get the
Firefox program itself.
So if you go you go to Mozilla.com
or getfirefox.com.
Oh yeah, getfirefox.com, and it'll take you right to the Mozilla page. Right there on the left hand side, you can get Firefox 1.5.
1.5. Okay.
Just click on that, download it.
Okay.
Or run it right from the, if you're doing DSL or Roadrunner, either
Roadrunner,
or,
yeah.
You can just say run it from that site. It will install the whole program. After that, then you can start putting what they call some of the add-ins or the add-ons,
like the
toolbars and the Javas and all these other different skins and the whole nine yards.
But you have to have Firefox itself installed first.
Correct.
Before you can do that.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
You're sort of putting the cart before the horse.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know how I got there, but yeah, I thought I was following the steps, but then obviously I wasn't.
Well, there are no steps to follow. You go to the Get Firefox page and click the download button. That's the only step there is.
Yeah, that's it. And once it's on your machine, you double-click on it to launch whatever you downloaded, then you double-click on it, it launches it, it installs it, and you can run it.
Okay.
I don't know where you were or what you were downloading, but it wasn't necessarily Firefox.
Okay. All righty.
All right. Our next caller, Dan from Greece, New York. Welcome, Dan. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. I have a question on why my computer only can capture video through my FireWire cable and port for my digital video camera if I do a cold boot of the machine with the video recorder on. I've updated all the drivers, replaced the FireWire card once. I've taken the video recorder to an independent computer, and I can plug that video recorder into this independent computer, and it immediately captures the video. If I plug in that video camera into my machine without doing a cold boot, it controls. I have the software can control the machine. It will do fast forward, playback, that type of thing. It captures the sound, but no video comes across. Any ideas?
What OS are you running?
I'm sorry?
What operating system?
XP.
Yeah, obviously there's something not compatible somewhere with between your OS and your capture program and your video card and your FireWire card.
Yeah. Because you've already proven that you can take the camera somewhere else and bam, it automatically checks it. Now, is this running Service Pack 1 or 2?
2.
2? And you've gotten all the updates for your video card?
Yes. Well, there weren't any, but yes.
Well, that could be the problem then.
Yeah.
It might need one before it'll work. What capture program are you using?
I've used several. The one I mostly use is Adobe Premiere. But I've also, when I've tried to investigate this with the Adobe people, I've downloaded a couple of video capture programs, simple ones off the internet.
And none of them work?
None of them work. It's only from a cold boot.
That points to a problem in Windows. If different programs don't work, it has to be a lower level in the operating system.
Right.
Yeah.
You might want to try reloading Windows over Windows.
Is there something in there that isn't working?
Yeah, that it should be. Because the minute he plugs that in, it should capture it and see it, you know.
Updated driver for the FireWire card, maybe?
Could be. But, I mean, I'd first start with over installing one over the other. Because just the fact that he's plugging it in and it's not finding it, and it is on the other machine. You know, the device is working, but something on his machine, the way it was set up or some other program or whatever might have changed it.
Well, it says it's getting audio but no video, so maybe his video card doesn't have enough video memory. Is it a video card or shared video? Yeah, if it's shared video, that could be a problem.
He's got to do some investigating to see what he's got in. Again, it's going back to what we first talked about. You know, certain things require system requirements.
Right.
And this might not meet the system requirements needed, whereas that other machine that he's plugging into, the video card and everything else can handle it no problem. So he might have to do investigating.
Right, a lot of machines that have built-in video just don't have the strength to do a lot of things people want to do nowadays. Got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Mina Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
We're not sure what Sean Hannity knows about computers. But then again, we're not sure what the Soundbites boys know about anything but computers. Catch Sean Hannity later today on Wham! Now, back to Soundbites on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Wright.
And I'm Rob Linton.
He's
and
still this trying to figure out where the on button is.
Is Soundbites.
Oh.
Sean Hannity.
Oh. Yeah. Before we get back to the phones, Trojan horses. It's a week of gloom and doom. Two new Trojan horses with distinctive traits have been flagged by security researchers. One that hijacks one-time use passwords, another that hides behind a rootkit and takes over your machine. They're unrelated to each other, but they're both very harmful. Banks in the United States, Germany, and Spain have been targeted by Meta Fisher, otherwise known as Spy Agent and PWS. They all have 50 names nowadays.
Yeah.
After infecting a computer, the Trojan horse waits for the user to visit a legitimate bank website and then injects HTML code into certain fields and then hijacks your PIN numbers and your transaction numbers. They're never logged at the website. They remain valid, and now the Trojan owns them. So you want to be careful of that. The other Trojan is inside a rootkit, and it directly directs infected Microsoft Windows PCs to websites where the programs are downloaded. It can unearth passwords and usernames. Doesn't have to track keystrokes, but it's been discovered. The security company says it has discovered 37,000 usernames on log files in 7,000 different locations that came from this.
Talking about banks, I got one. Oh, I've gotten quite a few from Chase. Telling me about my account and everything else and a website. And, I mean, if you look at it, folks, I mean, they had to steal the graphics literally from the Chase account or the Chase website because this email looks as official as you can get. The only problem is I never have, nor will I ever get, a Chase account.
Right.
But, you know, for you folks that do have one, I mean, this literally is unbelievable and wants you to go to this website because they need to verify some information. And it's like, right.
Yep.
So beware. There are so many out there. The banks will not do that unless you've had a conversation and are expecting something from them. And even at that, they won't do that. I've had them for my banking. They mail me, actually put stuff in the mail to verify either usernames or passwords or any other information. They do it by mail, not over the internet, because it is so easily hijacked.
In a related story, another dozen or so Nigerians have been arrested in the Nigerian 411 scams.
Yeah.
Being held in Amsterdam, waiting extradition to the U.S., accused of bilking over $1 million from their victims.
Over $1 million. From people who, well,
and this
you
is
know,
just
they
this,
think they're going to get
this
rich.
This is just
quick.
Three or four guys.
Yeah.
This time it was 30 and what they, you know, last year they arrested like 30. 60. So they're cracking down quite a bit on them.
Yeah,
and well, they should be.
Like I sometimes I'll like writing back to them. Listen, I was born at night, but just not last night.
Well, there's a couple of websites that have a lot now that have popped up, encouraging the scammers and feeding them fake information. And I love the one guy who said, when I steal money or launder money for people, I usually want 30% commission. You're only asking for 20%. Yeah. Marriage proposals, get them to stand in front of web cameras holding funny signs.
Yeah.
Well, there's another scam out there for a lot of distributors in that, and I've gotten them asking me to that they want to purchase these quantity of parts.
Yeah.
And they'll give me credit card numbers or give me the money if I overnight them.
Yeah, can I order 27 RAM chips and here's 15 credit cards? No.
Yeah. No.
Well, I had that. And I said, no, I'll tell you what. You first send me the money via money order or certified check.
Well, you got to watch about those because they're easy to fake with computers these days.
Right.
Well, they wouldn't get it.
In fact, there was a local guy. I think I've told the story before. One of our customers has a website that got spammed by the Nigerian scammers, and someone did it, got a fake check, took it to the bank to ask if it was real or not, and the bank called the police on him trying to cash a fake check.
Right, right. When he was just really asking.
Yeah. Is this a real check or not? So it's you know, who knows what, you know, the Bank of Des Moines, Iowa's cashier's check looked like.
Well, on that same vein, though, I had one, they wanted me, and they sent me five different charge cards.
Yeah.
And, of course, I turned it over to my friend Joe Henneke at the time.
Yeah, let the DAs look at it.
And let them look at it. You know, I turned it over to the Sheriff's Department, Monroe County Sheriff's Department, and let them handle it. But that's the whole trouble.
Although on the other side of the coin, since we have stores in more affluent suburbs, someone comes in to buy three or four iPods, they could just have three or four kids.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
But when you want 11, I know.
Right.
Or, you know, some odd number, and you want to spread it across several credit cards.
Yeah, it's time to flag that.
Yep.
You're not kidding. All right, our next caller is Gail from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Gail. What's your question? Gail?
AOL dial-up, and apparently I've still got Internet Explorer browser.
Yep.
And I've gotten some notices when I've gone to try to find a site, and they appear to be from AOL, and it said I need to update my browser.
Okay.
You probably have an old version of AOL, and
yes,
the browser in that is too old to view some of the sites you're going to.
Yep. Okay, so it would be safe to go ahead and do that?
Well, you'd want to update your AOL software to the latest version your computer can handle.
Okay.
But better yet would be to download Firefox for your browsing so you don't have to worry about the security holes in Internet Explorer.
Okay. Do I have to update? With what I have now, I could go and do Firefox?
Yeah.
Well, wait a minute. What OS are you running?
Windows 98.
Second edition?
Oh, I don't know.
See, this is where this is why
I can check. Second.
Yeah, because it's definitely got to be second edition if you're going to try and even updating some of the AOL software won't. Uh-huh. I mean, I think what is it?
Yeah, you might be stuck at 7 or 8. You might not be able to go to the current
depending on what version you are at. You might want to double check because
Firefox will run on 98 Prime.
Yeah, 90. Do that. Because if you try to update some of, depending on what version of AOL you're on, if you try to go up to the latest and greatest, it won't work on 98.
Right. Unfortunately, Gail, the real problem here is that in general, pretty much everybody has abandoned 95, 98, MEMT as an operating system, and 2000 as an operating system. So you're not going to find a lot of updates that actually work on that version. I'm sorry to say that, but it's true. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, Nick Francesco, and you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
It's Soundbites, America's longest-running computer show on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Once again, here's Nick Francesco.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbite. Well, Dell just bought another company. Dell, as you know, is a high-performance PC maker. They make all kinds of desktops and laptops and servers and yada, yada, yada. They have agreed to purchase yet another high-performance PC vendor called Alienware. Alienware makes the strangest-looking computers on the face of the earth.
I've had a couple of those in, and they literally look like
But they're really designed for gamers, and they're very high-end, very powerful machines.
$5,000 is small.
Entry-level
gaming computer.
Yeah, it really is. And Alienware makes some really hot boxes. There's no question about that. They also make terrific laptops. The big difference is that Dell has always been known as an Intel-based company. Mm-hmm. They are all about Intel.
And cheap.
Yeah.
And cheap. And one of the problems that they have nowadays is that a lot of people are turning to AMD because they're in many ways higher performance chips. And so consequently, Dell can't, apparently, the rumor is at least they've got a deal with Intel. They can't actually sell a lot of AMD machines.
Yeah, I don't understand that.
But now, having bought Alienware, which is all about AMD, they can now, you know, push people to the Alienware side to buy the AMD processors. So it just it opens things up for them. Unfortunately, it kind of closes things down for us. But it is kind of nice that the Alienware folks have made a bundle.
I like the AMD chip, and you know, nothing against Intel, but to simplify and explain what the difference is for most of the folks out there, why I like them. Is say you take an Intel Pentium 4, say 3.8.
Sure.
And you take an AMD 3800 Plus. All right, technically they're both rated the same speed. The difference being in the Plus chip, the AMD Plus chip, is that the AMD chip will do one more task per cycle.
Yep. That's.
You bored in there?
Yeah, he's bored in there.
Rob has apparently fallen asleep. His forehead hit a button.
Oh, will you stop it? It's these stupid PCs.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
The
I can see the Windows logo bouncing around. That'll do you.
So, yeah.
Anyways.
But it's the megahertz myth that Apple has been fighting for years. And now
Now they're embracing.
Intel and AMD, you know, even though they're both running at, you know, 3,800 megahertz, there's different speed chips.
Right. And technically, like I said, the AMD is doing one more task per cycle. In simple terms, if the Intel is doing, say, 100, the AMD is doing 101. They're at the same rate. It's just doing more tasks per cycle. So that, in a sense, makes it faster, but they can't tout it because it's still the same speed.
Right.
What everybody is locked into. Oh, it's a 3.8 versus a 3.2. You know, they're all asphyxiated on these numbers.
Right. Yeah, a 4-liter Ferrari against a 4-liter Dodge. Who's going to win?
Yeah.
Right.
So
yeah, it's, you know, I just happen to be a big fan of AMD. I can't help it. It's pretty neat.
I got one of the dual cores, and I love it.
Oh, yeah. That's my next purchase at some point when I actually, you know, have money and stuff. All right, our next caller.
Well, I got rid of. I was working off of. I was the last one in the shop to get upgraded.
Yeah.
And hello, I went from a Pentium 3, a low entry-level Pentium 3. How long ago was that?
Yeah.
Where it's my wife and, of course, Sam and Dan. You know, you upgrade those folks in the two workbenches. Mine's the last one
done. I rarely get to sit at my own desk and use my own computer because I'm always fixing somebody else's.
Well, that's just it. I have to agree with that. You know, the cobbler's children have no shoes.
Yep.
Yeah, so
I've got my Linux box. I've got a problem with the a power supply. Have I brought it to you? It's been sitting there for a month and a half.
Yeah, easy. I told you to bring it.
I just have to bring it down, and I just haven't done that yet, and I need to. But it's one of those deals where I do this all day long.
Yeah.
When I get home, I just don't want to have to deal with it. I just don't want to have to deal with it.
Same here. You know, and I just kept putting it up. Well, especially, I live right where I work. So it's like, yeah, I'll get to it. Finally, I just had to, because mine was just getting to where I couldn't even do simple letters.
Right.
It was just so messed up because I play around and tinker with so much stuff. I finally said it. And then it's like, well, if you got to get one.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right. When you said, honey, I'll get you a new one. Okay.
Yeah. She goes, whatever. Yeah. And I upgraded her. But, you know, I do it to mine, and it's like, well, I guess he's got to have the fastest machine. And it's like, for the time being.
Right.
Now I'm put down on the bottom of the list for another 10 years.
Right.
We run into political issues like that. It's time to get this guy a new computer. Well, it's going to be faster than his boss's computer because the boss's is a year older. What do we do?
Right.
Swap the cases. Didn't you do that once?
I did that once. I gave it. It's the bosses don't need the fast machines. The secretaries needed
you
the fast machines. So I put the fast machines in the slow cases and gave them to the secretaries. I don't think anybody still knows that. Nobody from my old place of business.
whatever it says on the outside.
It's multiple olds ago, actually. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to let the news folks come in. There goes Rob Jason. He's ready to do the news. And we're going to take a quick break. We'll be off sitting in the hammocks. And while you people listening to the news on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Think about it.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on News Radio 1180 WHAM. Get online now. Call 222-1180, the Choice 1 toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco. Oh, excuse me. I didn't realize you were
going. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I may hurl. No, thank you so much for Bernie. Thank you. I love you.
So I'm just randomly finding things in this computer system.
Apparently you are. I've told you before, if you're going to fall asleep sitting at the machine, make sure your forehead doesn't hit a button. Fall over to the side, at least. That's all I'm really asking from you.
Yeah, we just see feet go up in the air, and then we'd know you landed safely on the ground.
That's right. It's comfortable back in there.
When you dip out of sight, we know your forehead hit, but we don't know where the rest went.
Yeah. Right. All right.
Because those is the indentions on his forehead where it hit the keyboard.
I can see indentions.
ASDF.
All right. Well, I screwed up your system, so go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's entirely right. Not a problem at all. Before we get back to the phones, I want to talk a little bit about what happens at our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. We have a poll every single week. Last week's poll was about, we talked about legislation to create a .xxx domain for pornography. And so our question, of course, was, should there be one? Should there be a XXX domain for pornography? 377 of you answered the poll, making it number 55 in the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. As it turns out, 56% of you think yes, 28% of you don't care, only 12% of you think no, and 14 intrepid souls just clicked on the Macintosh. This week,
Steve went to 14 different clients?
Apparently he did. Yep. This week's poll comes from a story in the news. As you know, Microsoft has been promising us Vista, the next version of the Windows operating system, back when it was called Longhorn. The first time they said they were, the first finish date they gave us was, and I know you're not going to believe this, but I had to go back and look it up, 2003.
Mm-hmm. That's because
Vista
XP
was supposed to be out.
XP came out in 2002.
Yep, right.
So they were 2003, and maybe we'll slip it to 2004. So every 2 weeks, so it was 98, 2000, 2002, 2004, we should have had a new Windows.
Yep. Right. As it turns out, 2003 was not the date. 2004 was not the date. 2005 was not the date. Microsoft announced this week that 2006 will not be the date.
And boy, are distributors really porked off, because they were really counting on Vista being out, because he promised it for this winter.
Christmas shopping season.
They were hoping that they were going to be able to boost computer sales over the Christmas season with the new OS. And Gates said they're coming out when?
Sometime in 2007. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. By May 24th, we're not entirely certain what that's going to look like. If you are at a certain class of business enterprise, and you have certain agreements in place with Microsoft, you may be able to get it earlier, but it certainly won't be available.
Yeah, for all those companies
general.
That signed up for the $1,000 per computer, and we'll give you a free OS for the next version.
Yeah, and do you want to be the pioneer?
Yeah.
Right. And they are saying January 2007 it'll be available.
Yeah.
Well, in an interesting irony, when Apple's system Tiger came out last year, all the trade press was comparing Tiger to Longhorn.
Right.
What became Windows Vista. So they were comparing a released OS to what Microsoft said might be in the next version of Windows in another year.
Right.
Well, now that Windows has slipped again, we'll probably start seeing the 10.5 comparisons to Vista.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mac OS 10.5 is due out next year also.
This is a huge opportunity for both Mac and Linux to start making bigger inroads. If they're going to keep slipping Vista, and the way that they get it even to come out when they do is they've taken out all the stuff they've promised us.
Yep.
Everything that they promised us is gone. The database file system, all this stuff is gone. Only thing left in is the eye candy. And other than that, it's XP.
And on the support side of things, they've already announced that they're going to stop supporting XP as soon as Vista comes out.
Right. You're not even going to have a
grace period.
Grace period.
Because XP has been out for 4 years already.
Right. Right.
And you know what? Mark my words. I bet you, just like with Windows 98, Gates is going to get so much resistance. Because if that OS, like we were just saying, is just going to be eye candy, a lot of companies aren't going to sit there and be able to justify moving it over, and the pressure is going to be on him to keep XP around and support it and still sell it like he did with 98.
Right,
and it was the companies that said, wait a minute, you want me to move over to this new OS? Why? What is it going to do for me when all my machines are running 98 with no problems?
And when Microsoft stopped shipping XP to OEM, so computer companies can't put XP anymore and have to put Vista on it.
Well, do you know how they're doing it, how they're going to get it out in January 2007? They've taken all of the programmers off of Microsoft Office, the next version of Office. They've taken them all off of what's still being called Longhorn, the server version. And they've taken them all off the Xbox 360 to work on Vista. So not only is Vista going to be delayed, the new Office is going to be delayed.
Everything else.
Server is going to be delayed. The new Xbox 360
is going to
be delayed.
What's that old slogan about too many cooks spoil the broth?
Yeah. I think this broth already stinks to high heaven, and there's not much they can do against it.
I don't envy those programmers because, you know, being a former programmer, you know, to sit there and get my head around certain code doing one thing, and now all of a sudden I've got to shift to another whole operating system, literally.
Right.
And learn the code around that and what we can do and everything else. There's a big learning curve there. You just don't write a routine and have it go in. You've got to know what it's going to react with and interact with. And it's not easy.
Right.
So he's literally putting himself even farther behind.
Right. All right. So this week's poll, Vista's delay. It's all about Vista's delay. And the choices are, it devastates me. It disappoints me. It kind of disgruntles me. Who cares? The Macintosh, and I added the Linux this week just because I felt like it. And, of course, I misspelled the as the leet folks do, as the gamers all do, just as a joke, which apparently confused the living heck out of every single person who has put up an opinion. But so far, 94 of you have voted. A whopping 63% of you could not care less. 10% of you are disappointed. 9 people put in the Linux. 7 people are mildly disgruntled. 7 people put in the Mac. And 3 people are indeed devastated. Well, whatever you vote, and we'd love to have you vote. That's at soundbites.org, bites with a Y. When you're done, you'll see a yellow box underneath it. Then you can click Give Us Your Opinion. That will take you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. Thank you. where you can put an opinion, as a dozen of you have done already, because I know that for you folks, a mere checkbox is not enough to vent your spleen on a weekly basis. You need to be able to type text in so you can do that. You also have to remember that, as number 10 points out, Vista ain't going to be cheap, not just in what it costs you, but in what it costs you to upgrade your system. It's going to be very, very expensive. But yeah, that's your choice right now. It looks like Vista's done. When you're done with that, take a look around at AskNick.com. You might find something that amuses you. And when you're done with that, come back to our website, soundbites.org. Lots of fascinating stuff, including some of the coolest people on earth in the forum. So So join us at Soundbites, and it's a whole week's worth of fun, not just the couple hours we're here on the show. Pretty nifty stuff. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jack, who apparently doesn't come from anywhere. Jack, where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Goshen. It's Moody.
Oh, Moody, how are you?
Okay. I wanted to thank Dave for getting the, Steve for getting the podcast up so expeditiously lately.
He is an expeditious guy.
Yeah. I decided to forego my Sunday afternoon nap.
Oh, you don't need a nap. We need the archives.
Yep.
Anyway, to my question, putting a new computer together, and it's very slow to boot. From the Asus splash screen to the Windows splash screen, it must take about 2.5 minutes. And once I get into Windows, it runs fine.
Is this a brand new system that you're putting together?
Yeah, it's a new machine I'm putting together.
All right. The onboard, in the BIOS, you've got the antivirus program turned off there?
I believe so.
You might want to double check, make sure that that's turned off. Because sometimes, you know, that can by default be turned on.
There's usually also a lot of things in there about fast boot or detailed detailed progress as it boots, where it counts all your RAM.
Yeah,
I do have the fast boot enabled. This is a I've got an IDE drive-in, but it's got the SAT
SATA
capability also. And I was looking online. One thing that came up was that. Instead of having the drive as master, put it as either cable select or no jumpers on it. But that was the only thing I could find. I was just wondering if you guys had any other thoughts about
where it. Is it sitting on the little Cylon thing under Windows? You know, it boots up to the Windows screen and the little thing goes back and forth. Nobody knows what the Cylon thing is.
The thing goes back and forth.
Is that where it sits?
No. Once it gets to that point, it boots pretty quick. Up until that point, it's a good 2.5 minutes.
Well, you know what you got to do is, if you're not using the SATA drives,
right,
disable them in the BIOS. You got to turn that off, because when it's booting up, it's going through your IDE devices to see if there's anything there, and then it's going into check the SATA. So you're wasting time there. You've got to turn off some of the stuff that you're not using.
And you may be able, if you said you're getting the splash screen from your motherboard, you may be able to hit like escape or something and see if there's any messages behind it. It could be looking, as Dave is saying, for other hard drives to boot from before it gives up and finds your IDE drive.
Yeah, it's checking the whole system, so he's wasting time there.
Yeah, so everything you don't have, turn it off. That's the easiest way to go.
Yeah, especially on SATA. If he doesn't have it, it's wasting time checking all those channels.
Right, right. If it were waiting, and I'll say this for other people who may find themselves waiting at the little Cylon screen, that often means you've got more than one network card installed in your machine, and it's waiting for each one of those to say, no, there's no network attached. That can take up to 2 minutes, each and every one of them.
Yep.
So also, Moody, if you've got multiple network cards in and you're only using one,
turn the other one off.
Yep. That can help. Yep. All right, our next caller is Phil from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
What I got is, I've been trying to copy files from one folder to another, and while it used to work real nice, you know, right-click, drag over and drop, and then copy or move, whatever you want to do.
Right.
Now I'm coming up with it drops in my Roxio Easia Media Creator Basic DVD Edition, wants to install it or configure it. And it'll sit there and think for a while, and then it comes up with, you got to browse to another disk for the function that it wants to do.
There's a feature in Roxio. Called drag and drop disk burning.
Uh-huh.
And that's apparently taking control and thinking you're going to burn a disk of these files and not just move them from one folder to another.
Okay. Yeah.
So you may want to find that that feature inside the Roxio preferences and turn it off.
Okay.
Drag and drop disk creation or something like that.
That's easy.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much.
That's your deal. Thanks.
And you may want to look for updates to your Roxio, because that shouldn't happen. It should know.
Yeah.
That usually it puts a separate little window up that looks like a little CD icon. You drag it onto that window, and it makes a disk to burn.
He may be doing that.
Yeah. And within,
he may be dragging it to the wrong window, because that one looks like a CD as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And within Roxio, there's a feature there you can have it check for updates.
I ran into an interesting problem this week with a customer. I loaded the AVG7 update, and it popped up and said there's a bug in Roxio Easy Creator that makes AVG not work. Go to Roxio's page and download an update.
How cool is that?
So how does a CD burning program screw up your antivirus?
well, it just might report a file that it thinks that it's infected.
Yeah. A false positive from the CD's up.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Yeah, all right. You
that choked
to be,
me up there, yeah.
Yeah. Things are not good for you.
You better hand me that disinfectant.
Yeah.
Whoever uses this mic next.
Yeah, I have to say, apparently everybody on the show before us was sick, and so we've got the disinfectant running here. It's pretty if we're all sick next week, we'll all blame Jim Salmon. That's okay. Our next caller. Chris from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Chris. What's your question?
I have a virus. I think it's called Hobbit.ru, and it's giving me troubles because I can't get rid of it. And what the virus is doing, it's disabling my Yahoo and Google.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sending me to an actual Russian website for
both
of them. I try to run my safe mode virus scan, and it shuts my computer off.
What program are you using for virus scan?
I've used Norton Professional and also Adware.
Adware is not really a virus scanner.
Right.
It's for spyware and stuff. So I would suggest go to the security. Well, okay. The easiest thing to do at this point is to go to, on another machine that doesn't have the virus.
Yeah.
Go to the Security Tango website at securitytango.com. Go to click the Let's Dance button, print out that page, download all the software and burn it to CD.
Okay.
Take that back to your machine. Now the tough part is, can you access the CD in safe mode?
If you have access to another machine,
XP allows you.
Well, one of the easiest things might be just pull the hard drive out of the infected machine, put it as a slave on the other one, and scan it from there.
Right, and clean it that way.
If you're technically capable of doing that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's the best way to do it because what happens is a lot of these viruses are now burying themselves in the restore files. And even though, you know, the others might remove it and then you reboot because it's in a protected area in the restore files, it gets reinfected.
Well, that's why one of the steps in the Security Tango is to turn off system restore.
Yep.
All right, we have to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Online, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. Now, back to Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbite. You know, we've been talking a lot about security.
Soundbite?
Bites. I said bites. Bites with an S.
Wake up in there.
No, you said bite.
I said bites.
So I thought it was bites with a Y.
It is bites Francis with a Y, but there's also and a B and a T and an E. You happy now? All right. We've been talking a lot about security today and a lot about those things. You know, believe it or not, and I
know
this is going to shock
you.
This is going to shock you. I hope you're all sitting down. Microsoft's security chief, Mike Nash, who is responsible for setting the overall security strategy for Microsoft, is stepping down.
About time.
He says he struggled against, I'd like to spend more time with my family. Oh, no. He said he struggled against the public perception that its products were insecure. And he's going to take a break. He's going to take a break.
Hello? What rock has he been living under?
Well, this is the guy who went through the slammer worm and the My Doom worm and all that other stuff.
Yeah, because Windows has holes in it.
Well, it is a public perception that its products are insecure.
It's not public. Nobody it's said, known.
Nobody said those perceptions were incorrect. I'm just saying that the public perceives their products as insecure. I don't know if they're insecure because I don't know how they feel about their mothers, but I do know
he's
insecure.
He's insecure.
So Mr. Nash, you know, God bless you. You've performed yeoman service for Microsoft for a very,
now
very
wake
long
up
time.
And get a real job.
But security chief at Microsoft is you know, like the guy who fetches the ice on the Titanic. At some point, they're going to blame you.
Yeah.
There's no question in my mind that at some point, they're going to blame you. All right, our next caller is Debbie from Webster, New York. Welcome, Debbie. What's your question?
Hi. I'm having problems with my preview before printing.
Yeah.
It was working fine until about 2 weeks ago, and then it just stopped. I have it set so that whenever I print anything, it previews first so I can decide if I really want to print it. And it's checked in my my printer. The preview before printing is checked. I've tried unchecking it and rechecking it. Nothing seems to make it work.
What kind of printer do you have?
I have a Canon PIXMA IP4000.
And this the preview before printing is actually in that software, so it's supposed to bring it up.
Yes, it has been, but it stopped about 2 weeks ago.
What's changed?
Other than downloading Microsoft's updates, I don't know of anything, really.
Yeah, when you say you're downloading Microsoft updates, are you running XP?
Yes.
Did you install Service Pack 2? Probably.
Or was that already installed?
I think I did.
Yeah. What I might suggest you do is uninstall and reinstall that Canon software.
Okay.
Go to Canon's website, see if there's a
newer
version.
Right. First, check to see if there's a new. To see if there's a newer version, because what's happened in the course of time, there are an amazing number of programs that Service Pack 2 has broken.
Yes.
It's a ludicrously long list.
Especially scanners and printers.
Okay.
Yeah, whoever is the service manager for Service Pack 2 at Microsoft ought to step down along with Mr. Nash. They ought to Could be a perceived perception.
I mean, that there's something wrong there. I mean, you know, we don't want to jump to things, but...
Right, we don't want to jump to conclusions, but...
But when they were working and now don't.
A huge list of programs that are broken. So let me suggest that you check to see if there's an update specifically for Service Pack 2.
Okay.
If not, uninstall and then reinstall the software you have.
Yeah, okay. Because... Unfortunately, Debbie, that's the whole problem with the service packs we're finding, at least I've seen in my shop. Things were working fantastic until somebody, they did it, especially if they were working fine with Service Pack 1, go to Service Pack 2. Now, all of a sudden, a lot of printers and scanners aren't working. And before I even do the updates for them, I go to the website to make sure that their printer or scanner has updates for Service Pack 2. Otherwise, yeah. I don't want them or encourage them to do the update until there is an update out there, because it's going to render other equipment that's working fine now useless.
And on the other side of that, you may buy a new something or other that requires Service Pack 2, so you have to install it to get this new thing working, but then all your old things stop working. So it's a horrible catch-22.
Right.
Okay, I'll try that.
All right. Let us know how you make out.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
That's why more and more and more I way prefer Linux. I'm sorry, a couple of button clicks, and every application on my system is updated to the latest version and runs perfectly with the latest version. It's very much like the updates under the Macintosh, which I very much appreciate, but it does everything, every
third-party program
I have. Yeah.
Yep.
And that's what I like.
There isn't any real third party in Linux.
Well,
it's all the open source community.
Right. The point is, it's not just the operating system and a couple of applications. It's everything.
Yep.
So I really appreciate that. And if it's not going to update, if it's not going to work, it doesn't update, and it tells you that, and it says, you know, waiting for a completion thing. And so I'm just way continuing to be a fan. Our next caller is Mike from Buffalo, New York. How do you do, Mike?
Enjoying the better weather.
That's what I like to hear. They're saying it's going to be actually spring-like by the end of this week.
I think it's pretty good right now.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be all out in the hammocks later this afternoon. What's your question, Mike?
A long-time listener, and I wanted to ask you guys if you can tell me if I need a better monitor.
Yes.
Okay.
Looking for us to back you up as you speak to your significant other?
No, not necessarily.
Oh, well, all right. We'll actually wait to hear the question before we answer it.
Well, of my three children, my youngest, my son, is the gamer. His two older sisters never really got involved with it. And it seems like every Christmas we buy a new video card.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Only at Christmas? Wow.
Yeah, just only at Christmas.
He gets off cheap.
Yeah.
So what happens is I run a good he uses a good Trinitron monitor, but it's very old. It's about 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, is it the fact that should I buy a new monitor for him and give his monitor to his sister, type of thing.
Yeah. I see what you're saying.
And I really don't know whether it seems like buying a new card always does it, but is there something else is the monitor dragging down the performance?
Well, there's
of the card?
There's a couple of things here. If it's the high-end Trinitron, then in terms of its speed and capabilities as a gaming monitor, it's terrific. The only question that I have is what's the resolution of the monitor? In terms of the width and height and number of pixels and stuff like
refresh
that.
Refresh rate.
If that's all good, well, the refresh rate comes out of the card. So if that's all good, then you should be fine in terms of that. The other part of the problem is a lot of LCD monitors have they're a little slow in their updating of the pixels.
Especially
and they
the
leave
cheaper
a,
ones.
They leave a streak. So you'd have to go extremely high end on your on an LCD monitor to get the kind of quality you're getting in your Sony.
$600 or $700 for a 20-inch LCD.
Right.
The other issue with the CRT monitors is you mentioned this is 8 years old. The pixels fade over time.
Right.
So you're not getting as accurate a color as you once were. But unless you're doing professional photo retouching, that may not matter.
Right. So those are all things to take into account. But if you go look at any of the superstores and check out the monitors that are on display, if they let you take a look at what's going on, watch movement, and you'll often see streaks behind things that move, like in the comic books when, the Flash ran, there were those speed lines behind him.
Yeah.
You see the same idea. Yeah. The same thing going on the screen, because the refresh on the screen is slower, and consequently you got to buy a very high end flat panel monitor.
Look at
a
17 or a
that.
19 inch. Like I say again, with the and getting something that's going to work with his higher end video card, the refresh rate's there, tying into the monitor,
right?
Because you could have a high end card and it can do a real fast refresh rate, but if the monitor can't sync up with it, it's going to keep downstepping until it can find
right.
A
if you want
suitable.
An 85 hertz card and you only got a 70 hertz monitor, you got a problem there.
Exactly.
So yeah, you might want to upgrade that, but be careful of what you get, and be aware that if you're going to run Vista at any time, your system isn't fast enough. The video card's not good enough. The monitor's not good enough. The hard drive's not big enough. The RAM's not enough. Hmm. The processor's too slow.
Well, I'm hoping the delay goes longer.
Yeah,
probably will be
like for another 10 years. If you're stuck in the Windows world and you insist on being there, the price of poker is not only going up, but boy, howdy, is it going up high.
Yep.
All right, our next caller, Thomas from Newark, New York. Welcome, Thomas. What's your question?
I installed your Firefox and Thunderbird on my computer.
Yeah, well, they're not actually ours. We didn't write them. I wish we had.
Yeah, well, I have a little problem with Thunderbird.
Uh-huh.
Sending email and receiving email, and I have Verizon DSL, and they spent 2 hours with me setting the settings in Thunderbird.
Yep.
Okay, so now what I end up with is the emails come in both my Verizon mailbox and my Thunderbird mailbox.
It's supposed to, and whenever anyone sends mail, it goes to your internet provider first. And then downloads to your computer when you tell your computer to check your mail.
Right.
Okay, so then a day or so later, it'll show up in Thunderbird.
A day or so later?
Well, I don't check Thunderbird every day. I don't think it comes in instantly.
Should come in. The instant your provider gets the mail, you should be able to download it to your computer.
Well, Verizon, it should come into Thunderbird.
Well, right. Now, hold on. Any email client only checks for mail a certain number of times.
Yeah.
Right? So you can set it to check every 30 seconds, every 5 minutes, every 20
minutes. I don't know what it's set because I'm not really familiar with Thunderbird and I have a lot of trouble mail navigating in it. But I also have MSN, which is my main mail, and that's in Explorer.
Yeah, because that will
create a different problem. If you're using two different email programs to download your mail, the first program that downloads the mail gets it, and the other programs won't ever get the mail.
Now, right. Verizon is my provider, but they furnish MSN.
Well, that doesn't matter. You can use any mail program you want. But
except for MSN, you got to use MSNs because the mail literally stays up on Their server,
if you're using the MSN service, yeah.
It always comes in. Well, my main, I have two different addresses. The Verizon address is different than the MSN.
Right, right. But MSN also, mail always stays on the MSN server. You can't change that.
Right.
On the Verizon side, however, there are a couple of things about Thunderbird that you need to know. You can uncheck a box or check a box in Thunderbird that says leave the mail on the server. So you then have it in both places, your machine and the Verizon server.
Well, that must be checked then.
That must be checked. In addition, you can set Thunderbird to check however often you like, once every they don't like you to check much more than once every 5 minutes. And frankly, you know, unless you're the national security advisor, you don't need to check that more often than that.
I usually only check it. I don't go to Thunder maybe only every other day or something.
Right. But when it's running, I'm saying that it will check as often as you tell it to. And once every 5 minutes is more than enough for everybody. You don't have to overload their system more than that. But my point is, if it's only set to check once a day or twice a day, if it's set to check that, then you may, in fact, see the mail in two separate places because of that.
Is that under account settings?
That's under account settings. That's where you set all of that stuff. So make sure
all that stuff was set up by the Verizon operator.
Well, but that doesn't necessarily mean they did it right.
No, but it took her 2 hours, and then she had to call her supervisor.
Well, there you are. That's the other part.
It's actually quite surprising they helped you anyway, because typically with internet providers, they only provide support with the software they provide.
Wait a minute. Here's one thing I'm confused about, Thomas. Maybe you can clarify this for me. It sounds like you're using, granted, you've got the two different email accounts. You got MSN and you got this Verizon one. And you're using normally the Verizon program to check your email. Once in a while, you're using Thunderbird, as I understand this?
Well, usually in the morning, I go to MSN because that's my main one.
Right, okay.
And I'll go to Verizon.
All right.
And I don't always go to Thunderbird. I might be another day or so before.
Wait a minute. Here's the thing I'm confused at. You're using two programs to check one account. You don't have to do that. You can either use Thunderbird or Verizon. You don't have to use both.
And if you do use both, you'll end up with a confusion between where the mail is.
Yeah, you just pick one
and
use it.
That's where your problem comes in. Just pick one of those two and go for it. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
Rochester's most computer talk that you can understand. Now back to Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Okay, one more security story. I know you're thrilled and delighted with every one we bring you, but we have to bring you this one, too. According to a bunch of researchers, we talked about this before, and I got all this hate mail. But I got to reiterate this. There was a new symposium of security people that went on just a couple of weeks ago. And invariably, all the experts are saying the holiday is over for Mac users, that Mac users are no longer invulnerable to attacks. We just saw it with a story just a little earlier today.
There have been four viruses and Trojans in the last month.
So all you folks who've been laughing at the Windows people because you're just so wonderful and you don't have viruses.
Well, on the Windows side, they have four in the last minute.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm not saying it's as bad. This is the problem. Everybody says, well, we're not as bad as Windows. Well, you know what? I don't care. That's not the point. The point is you get them. So you need, we're just trying to protect you. If you don't want to be protected, the heck with you. But the point is we're trying to protect you. You can't run without antivirus software anymore. You just can't do it. I don't care what your operating system is. I don't care how proud of it you are. I don't care if you bought the T-shirt and the patch for your coat and the stickers for your window. You need to have the antivirus software running if you expect to keep your machine clean nowadays.
And a lot of the same things we've said for Windows for the years is, you know, safe computing. Don't go to unsavory websites. Don't go to peer-to-peer download sites because that's where most of the garbage comes from.
Right.
The
right.
Patch for your coat.
Please, you'd be shocked. The people who get the Apple logo tattooed into their heads and shaved into their hair and all that. But, you know, the people who have hair.
By the way, that's real nice what you did there on the side.
You like that?
Yeah, with that logo. Yeah, it's nice.
With the little logo? Yeah. It's the penguin.
Ask Nick shaved so nicely.
Ask Nick shaved nicely on one side and take a hike on the other side because my barber wouldn't put in the other phrase I wanted, so we stuck with take a hike.
Well, there was a website that came up a few months ago, thankyousteve.com. This coming Saturday, April 1st, is the 30th anniversary of Apple Computer. And for the last 30 years, the industry analysts have been saying that Apple's going to die.
Yeah, Apple's done now.
Yep.
I thought it was Thank You, Steve Ray.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
so this guy's
and it's Steve because it's both Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. Right, yeah. They're not playing favorites.
The Steve and Steve, yeah. So it's, for 30 years of insanely great software. No. So where's Microsoft going to get their next visions from?
Well, but they've got it. I mean, you know what fascinates me is the fact that I think the battle's over. You know, I think that Apple has won. The iPod, they all talk about, we got the iPod killer. I don't think it's possible because it's become a cult. It's not a product anymore.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft has done a great job of locking you in. You buy an iPod, you buy a Mac, you get iTunes, it all works together. And it really works best in that configuration. And you're pretty much stuck. If you get X number of copies you can make and X number of places you can play it and all the yada, yada, yada. But by making it 99 cents a tune and easy to carry, and they've made the thing a cult product. You know, if you've got one, you're cool. If you don't have one, you're not cool. And they've done it. Nobody else has. You know, other people may have technically superior products. I don't know. The point is they don't have a culturally superior product. And that's where Apple has really won with the iPod. It has nothing to do with the technology and everything to do with the cultural icon they've created.
And there's a couple of books out, The Cult of iPod, with the guy has an iPod shaved onto his head.
Right. And the reality is I don't care who you are. I don't care how old you are, how young you are, what country you're from. You'd be hard-pressed to find somebody who doesn't recognize the name iPod.
There's an interesting story coming out of France that the French government is passing a law to require Apple to remove the digital rights management from iTunes.
Right.
And so Apple is countering back that the French government is sponsoring state-run piracy and that they're going to sell a lot more iPods because people can steal the music from anywhere.
Right.
So in France, and the same thing will likely happen with the Windows and the Rhapsody and the other services. They have to remove the digital rights management that prevents people from stealing the songs. And what we figure the bottom line is going to be is that those electronic music stores are just going to stop selling songs in France.
Right.
So because it's the record labels that want the anti-piracy built in.
But you can tell, right, exactly. And you can tell something's become a cultural icon. Just last night on the Friday night on Doctor Who.
They're
5 billion years in the future, and they're talking about artifacts from old Earth, and they reel in a Wurlitzer jukebox, and the guy says, and the woman says, we believe this was called an iPod. Now, that's funny.
Yeah.
If they said, well, we believe this is called an iRiver music player, this is a Sony Walkman, or not as funny. iPod is funny. Why? Because it's in our heads already.
Yep.
We already know it. It's become a cultural thing. All right, our next caller is Heather from Brockport, New York, and we'll talk to her after the break. You know, we need signals. We need some sort of something. That
I give you signals, but you don't pay attention.
You have five fingers.
Well, you're always flapping your finger around.
You should use all of them. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, Heather. Hang on, we'll get to you in a few minutes on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
WHAM's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
And this is Soundbites. Now, we kind of teased Heather. She thought she was getting on before the break. We're not going to wait even a second. Heather, I apologize for having teased you. What's your question?
Hi. I have a question regarding the Security Tango.
Yes.
When my computer is not in safe mode, I know I'm supposed to do all this in safe mode.
Sure.
And the problem is that I cannot get Stinger to appear anywhere in safe mode. It's on my desktop when it's not in safe mode, but when I try to go into safe mode, it just disappears. So as a consequence, I have to go back off of safe mode, and I'm running part of the Tango off of safe mode and part of it on safe mode.
That's okay. The only reason we tell you to do safe mode is from the fact that quite often Adaware and SpyBot will lock up on people.
Okay.
So that's why we tell them by default to run in safe mode, because various programs can hold the system up, because normal mode, you see a lot of stuff get loaded down in the lower right-hand corner. Safe mode doesn't load any of that stuff.
Okay.
So if you don't run into that problem, you really don't have to run it in safe mode.
And the issue is that the Stinger program is on the desktop of a specific username.
Okay.
And when you're in safe mode, you usually log into a different user, the high-level administrator user.
Okay.
So you'll have to navigate through your hard drive to find the desktop folder of the other user.
Okay.
Or easier yet, just put Stinger at the root of the hard drive so you can get to it from any username.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Our next caller will be Art from Hamlin, New York. Welcome, Art. What's your question?
Hi. My computer crashed the other day, and I went through the restore and got it back up and running. But, of course, I lost all my data.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way to get, like, the My Documents file back and all those documents in there?
Not anymore.
Nope.
Once you erase the hard drive, they're gone.
Yeah,
once you start writing new data to the hard drive, it deletes all the old stuff.
Yeah, because it literally does a format and puts it, like, the day you bought it out of the box. What I recommend to folks doing, and I'm seeing a lot of this still again, is that folks, you know, they call tech support, and they're telling them put in the recovery disk and not asking them first, did you do a backup? Because these recovery disks literally format the whole drive. So any documents, any important information, settings, emails, everything else, it's gone.
Yeah, so the backstory is you want to have a backup before the computer crashes, so you
don't
lose any stuff.
And there's other things that you can do before. The other worst thing that folks are being told is, well, you've got a virus. The only way to get rid of it is format your hard drive.
That gets
wrong.
You off the phone the fastest.
Yeah.
Does get rid of the virus.
Yeah, but it gets rid of everything else. There are so many other ways that you can get rid of a virus before. I mean, I can't remember a machine that I've had to format a hard drive to get rid of a virus. Not in the past 15 years. I've always been able to get rid of them without doing that.
When I called the tech line, to their credit, they did ask me. They said, now, before we do this, do you have a backup? And I said, yes, I've got it burned on a DVD. But what happened when I burnt the DVD, the My Documents file didn't burn onto the DVD for some reason.
Yeah.
But they were careful.
Okay, good. Well, that's good to hear. That's good to hear. But, yeah, unfortunately, your host.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right, then.
Sorry. You know,
It is theoretically possible and would be quite expensive to use a recovery program on the rest of the hard drive and see if there's any space
where the data is.
As soon as you start writing new data to the hard drive, you're physically overwriting the old data.
Yeah. And it's literally going
to
be
about $1,000 minimum to recover data from a hard drive.
And they won't even guarantee the integrity of it
because
of the writing in different sectors.
Right. Hate to say it, but that's
Get your backup first, and I guess, you know, the next step is make sure the backup worked.
Okay.
Well, you're right.
Put the disk back in, make sure it's readable. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Our next call is Bill from Bath, New York. How are things in Bath, Bill?
Oh boy. I'm listening to all these people's problems and saying, been there, done that.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to recover from a mess that for some reason my restored doesn't seem to want to work, so I ended up going back and, you know, just what these guys are talking about. But my problem right now is that I've got everything back to where I'm functional, but on my Symantec, I've got it in the system, my Norton, but I can't get a live update. And I've tried their tech support service, and I'm lost. I've been in and out of there so many times. But it says I don't have internet connection, but I've got internet connection.
One question for you, Bill, is what version of Symantec is this?
I've got the 2002.
Tell you what, don't even bother wasting your time doing anything more with Symantec. Go over to our website.
Okay.
Go to the Security Tango.
At securitytango.com.
And on the left-hand side, you're going to see a button there for Grisoff, AVG, download and install that. It's a free virus program and you'll love it even more so than Symantecs because it won't drive you nuts.
And what probably happened is there's something in the Restore CD that the bundled Symantec needs in order to run, and since your Restore CD didn't work right, it didn't reload itself.
Yep. So,
but you can get a free version at free.grisoff.com, or you can pay for a version that has more features. But don't even waste your time right now. Get AVG and move on.
And, save you some money.
I go to soundbites.com and then...
No, go to securitytango.com.
Oh, securitytango.com.
Yep.
And then on the left-hand side, I find the ABG.
Yep.
Okay. Right, at securitytango.com. Or you can just go to free.grisoft.com.
And try that product out. And like I say, it saves you, $40?
All right, we've got 2 minutes. So, Ed, from Rochester, New York, quickly, what's your question?
Yes, I have the same problem. I have a HP laptop that crashed on me.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the hard drive is probably bad.
Okay.
But I did something really stupid. I went into the settings
mm-hmm.
and went into where the hard drive was.
Yeah.
And I had different things enabled and disabled.
Yeah.
Well, it had the one that would read the sectors and all that was disabled. So
okay.
I enabled that, and I disabled some LBA or whatever.
Yeah, large block read.
And now it won't do anything. I try to go into settings. It won't come up in the settings.
All right, when you go boot that laptop up, what you can do is down along the bottom, there is a way you can set the back to factory defaults. Select that. Reboot the machine. What it does is it puts it back to the original settings that it came from the factory.
And that should work.
And that should work. If not, give me a call.
If the hard drive has physically failed, you'll have to put a new hard drive in.
But, we can try that out.
All right, we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Next week, call earlier. Call early, call often. That's what we say. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton. I'm Nick Francesco. Don't forget to please vote in the poll. Give us your opinion at AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And join us in the forums. We'll be back next week. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, and all of you on the greatest computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.